Greymoor Friars Monastery is located on Atonement Mountain near Garrison, New York. Adjacent to this famous monastery, one sees St. Christopher's Inn. Homeless men from all walks of life come to this famous inn. These men are fed and sheltered by the Greymoor Friars, and no distinction is ever made of race, creed, or color. You are invited to listen to another chapter of the dramatized story, The Life of Christ, brought to you transcribed each week by the Greymoor Friars, who offer this series with the prayerful hope that this vivid portrayal of the life of Christ will help to awaken in you a deeper personal love of God and a firm determination to strive to prove that love in your daily life. Now, Chapter 21, The Confession of Peter.
And he gave him power and glory and a kingdom, and all peoples, tribes, and tongues shall serve him. His power is an everlasting power that shall not be taken away, and his kingdom shall not be destroyed.
Now Jesus was in the district of Caesarea Philippi, where he had come to be hidden from men. For the Jews did not come here except for purposes of trade, and the people who lived in this land were indifferent to religion. And the disciples were with him, for he had words of great importance to say to them.
Who do men say the Son of Man is?
Some say John the Baptist, others Elias,
others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets.
But who do you say that I am?
How often they had asked themselves that question. How often they had told themselves they knew the answer. But now they had been asked it by Jesus, they were speechless. And they stood looking at him and at each other. And they were shaken, and their hearts leaped. And it seemed as if they heard the question asked, not of the moment, but out of the past and into the future, echoing as rolling thunder. Who do you say that I am? And many sayings rushed into their minds, and past words repeated themselves within their hearts.
Behold the Lamb of God. We have found the Messiah. We have found him of whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write.
The Son of God, the King of Israel, a great prophet hath risen up amongst us, and God has visited his people.
Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast words of everlasting life, and we have come to believe and to know thou art the Son of God.
This is he of whom I said, after me cometh a man who is preferred before me.
But who do you say that I am?
Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God.
Blessed art thou, Simon Bar-Jonah. For flesh and blood has not revealed this to thee, but my Father in heaven. And I say to thee, thou art Peter, and upon this rock I shall build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven.
12 listened. They dared not speak, for never before had Jesus spoken with such authority. And having spoken these words, Jesus turned his steps southward, and they followed back toward Galilee. And as they walked, Jesus charged his disciples,
"You shall not tell any man of me that I am Jesus the Christ."
But why? Why, Peter, must we keep silent about it?
It would be dangerous, Judas. Until now, he has never declared himself to be the Christ. Others have said that he was, but he has always rebuked them for it, or ignored it.
Peter is right. But what has he to fear now? What can anyone do to him? Isn't this the moment we've lived for? For him to declare himself?
Perhaps the time is not now. Suppose he were to tell others what he has told us. What would be the result among the people?
There would be turmoil. The people have various ideas of the Messiah and his mission.
Yes, James, they have. And I'm afraid each idea is based on individual desires. Some would want him to be proclaimed king at once. Others would demand the land of milk and honey to appear overnight. And still others, especially the priests of the temple, would demand that he summon the angels and drive the Romans from the land.
In other words, we're in no better position for knowing the truth than we were when we merely suspected it. And why, I ask you, did he choose this particular time to tell us?
I don't know, Judas. But there's one thing we must always remember about the Master.
What?
He has always spoken of the kingdom of heaven. The things that men deem important in this world, he seems not to be greatly concerned about. Oh, here he comes. You can ask him if you wish.
No. No. I have nothing to ask him.
Peter, summon the disciples. We must leave this place.
Whither goest thou, Master?
To Galilee and beyond. The time will come when I must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and scribes and be put to death.
Master!
Put to death, Master?
But how can they if
And on the third day, rise again.
What is he talking about? He's the Christ. How can they put him to death? Or even make him suffer for that matter? He is the Christ.
I don't understand it either. Why should he be rejected by the elders? He can win them to his side the same as he's won others. He can convince them. He's the Christ.
I've been talking to the others. Peter, they feel you should go to Jesus and ask him for an explanation. They think perhaps he's speaking in parables, which he would make clear.
Yes, yes, Peter, you must speak to him. We're all very confused and disheartened by what he said.
You've made too much of this. Of course, there's some hidden meaning which he will in time clear up.
Peter, don't you feel you should speak to him?
I hesitate to disturb him.
But it's having a bad effect on all of us.
And it's your place to speak up, Peter. After all, he did say you were his rock and promised you the keys of the kingdom of heaven.
It's your duty, Peter. You may not have noticed it, but the Master seems depressed.
Surely you don't think he meant those words about suffering literally.
He acts as if he did.
That's true. Philip was talking to me. He thought a change had come over the Master from the moment we turned our steps southward.
Change?
Yes. Philip feels a turning point has been reached. That we had stopped retreating from the Pharisees and were marching against them. But our leader was as one who marched as if spurred on by the calm finality of doom. Philip said it's as if he were being drawn by some great force to the south.
And this talk about the elders and chief priests rejecting him. True, they have been questioning him, but it's their duty and responsibility to see that the people are not misled by a false messiah. I'm sure now that Jesus has declared himself, the necessary arrangements can be made to fit him into the temple. They're reasonable men among the priests, and there's no need for war between Jesus and the temple.
But aside from all these considerations, Peter, you must speak to Jesus for his own sake. He's strangely sad since he spoke to us. At a time when we should rejoice with him, gloom is upon us.
I will speak to him. I'm sure he spoke in parable, and I'll get the true meaning of it from him. Master, I ask to speak to you privately because we find ourselves concerned over what you said about suffering and rejection and death in Jerusalem. Master, thou art the Christ. Far be it from thee, O Lord. This will never happen to thee. But a word from thee and the priests of the temple will...
Get behind me, Satan!
Master, why do you rebuke me so?
Thou art a scandal to me.
Thou dost not mind the things of God, but those of men.
You are so silent, Peter.
What did he say to you?
I came to him. I chided him for what he had said, and as we had spoken among ourselves, remonstrated that no harm could come to him because he was the Christ.
We watched you from a distance. He seemed angry with you.
Never has he been so stern. He looked upon me as if I were Satan himself. He told me that I whom he declared to be his rock, minded not the things of God, but those of man. I am more confused than before.
He gave no explanation of his words?
None. I but mentioned that it could not happen, and he turned upon me.
Would you think then, Peter, he did not speak in parable?
I dare not think otherwise, but I dare not again approach him on the subject. If he is to clarify the meaning, we must wait his own time.
Come, let's catch up with the others. The crowd's coming from Capernaum to greet him.
Yes, Andrew's signaling. Jesus is holding up his hand. He's going to address them.
Notice, Peter, how he looks at us.
Silence. He's going to begin.
If anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For he who would save his life will lose it. But he who loses his life for my sake and the gospel's sake will save it. For what does it profit a man if he gain the whole world, but suffer the loss of his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his own soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes with the holy angels in the glory of his Father. Amen, I say to you, there are some of those standing who will not taste death till they have seen the kingdom of God coming into power.
And the crowd listened to him and were silent in their awe. For he spoke as one looking into eternity, and yet it seemed that he looked too into the heart of each man present. And to the disciples who knew who he was and had reasoned within themselves his message of doom, his words now caused them to weigh themselves. For now he spoke not of things clean or unclean, or of curing on the Sabbath, but of matters of life and death.
Again he speaks of death, how he dwells on it, and of taking up this cross. What cross? Why must one die to be saved? That makes no sense. And I don't like the way he once cried out in the synagogue that one of us, one of his own, was a devil. Who can he have meant? We have all given up much to follow him. And yet at last, when he tells us he is the Christ, he binds us in silence and refuses to exercise his power, which would bring us some reward for our sacrifices.
Whoever is ashamed of me and my words, he says. I know he's addressing me, and it's I who am ashamed for my words. How many times I've failed him. That time when the net was cast. A time when he called to me to walk across the waters. And only yesterday when I chided him, I, Peter, whom he called the rock, I'm not a rock, I'm shifting sand. Never, Master. Never will I fail you again.
And James and Andrew and Philip and Matthew, all his disciples searched their hearts as he taught them and revealed to them that the world they knew was nothing, and the soul of man was everything. And because of his words, they were humbled and then exalted by their promise. And all but one whispered to himself, I will take up my cross and follow thee. Then for a week they lingered near Capernaum. But on the eighth day, they set out for the vale of Esdraelon, and in the afternoon came to the foot of Mount Tabor.
Judas, I'll need provisions for four.
Where are you going, Peter?
Jesus is climbing Mount Tabor and requests that I, James, and John go with him.
Very well, I'll get food ready. How many meals?
Enough for one meal. I'm sure the Master does not intend to stay long.
Why are you four going up the mountain?
The Master did not say. He merely requested that we be ready to go with him.
We're at the top.
I'm not used to climbing. I'm out of breath.
Oh, I'm not only tired, I'm sleepy.
And John, too. He can't keep his eyes open. You and I must stay awake.
Yes, Peter. Sit down and rest. I'll stay awake. What's that? A light. Peter, John.
What?
Wake up.
Where are we? James, what is it? I must have fallen asleep.
The light. Off to the left.
Who is there?
It's Jesus. But his garments are so dazzling white, I cannot look at them. It hurts my eyes.
James. John. There are other figures there in the light. Are they men or...
Yes. I see them. They seem to be talking to Jesus.
Those two, I know them. And yet I've never seen them before.
Who are they?
The one to the right is Moses.
Oh.
The other, Elias.
Look, they turn to leave him.
Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. And let us set up three tents, one for thee and one for Moses and one for Elias.
They do not hear. They're going. But Peter, what's happened? I seem not to see them clearly.
A cloud has drifted over the mountaintop. Feel the dampness?
Peter, I can't even see you now.
Stand fast. Don't walk about. The cloud will pass.
Peter, I hear a voice. It's coming from above.
This is my beloved son. Hear him.
On hearing the voice from the cloud, the disciples fell prone on the ground and were exceedingly afraid. And they dared not look up.
Arise, and do not be afraid.
Master!
Come, let us descend. Vision to no one till the Son of Man has risen from the dead.
Peter, again he pledges us to secrecy. First, none of us is to reveal that he is Christ. Now,
None of us three is to speak of this vision.
But he qualifies it, James.
Yes. Till the Son of Man has risen from the dead. What can he mean by that?
I do not know, James. It puzzles me that he speaks of death and of suffering.
Peter, can it be that he refers to resurrection? As prophesied by Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. Remember Isaiah?
Yes. We have not wrought salvation on the earth. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth have not fallen. The dead men shall live, the slain shall rise again. Awake and give praise, ye that dwell in the dust.
And Ezekiel, ye dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. Behold, I will send my spirit into you, and you shall live. And I will lay sinews upon you, and will cause flesh to grow over you, and will cover you with skin. And I will give you the spirit, and you shall live. And you shall know that I am the Lord.
And many that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some unto life everlasting, and others unto reproach to see it always. But they that are learned shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that instruct many to justice as stars for all eternity.
Can it be that we are on the eve of the resurrection told by the prophets?
If so, why did not Elias remain instead of appearing to us as a fleeting vision?
Yes, yes, you are right, Peter. He should have stayed to prepare the way.
Come, let us ask Jesus about this.
Master, we want... That is, I've been wondering about the prophecy regarding Elias. I was asking Peter only the other day.
The prophecy of Malachias, Master. Did he not write, "Behold, I will send you Elias the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with anathema."
And this is taught by the scribes and the Pharisees. But Master, you have come. Why then do they say Elias must come first?
Elias is to come first, and will restore all things.
Yes, but how then is it written of the Son of Man that he should suffer many things and be despised?
Master, I confess I'm bewildered, even as is James by the writings of the ancients. We're taught to expect Elias as a messenger, but that God's own son should be despised seems to us...
I say to you that Elias has come already.
He has come already.
And they did not know him, but did to him whatever they wished. So shall the Son of Man suffer at their hands.
And they understood that he spoke of John the Baptist, the one sent from God, who had come to proclaim the Christ and to bear witness to him. And the Pharisees knew not this witness, and they schemed among themselves. And he was seized by Herod and beheaded.
And he gave him power and glory and a kingdom, and all peoples, tribes, and tongues shall serve him. His power is an everlasting power that shall not be taken away, and his kingdom shall not be destroyed.